So, we're here today to discuss joy. Those of you who've been with us this month, this is not your first rodeo. We have been discussing joy on Sundays and also Mondays and also Thursdays. But for some of us, this may be the first time. And also, I want to bring back the context. We're discussing joy within this year's topic, which is the path of transcendental dependent arising. We're discussing, I think of this as like, I don't know, this whole process I think of as, when satellites, I think they do this, right? Like in order for in order for objects to escape Earth's gravity, they orbit Earth and they spin and they spin and they spin and they reach a velocity where they're able to shoot out and they're able to be projected like a sling, like a slingshot, or well, not a slingshot. What is the thing? Like a bola? Is that what it's called? The thing that people do this and then they swing? I don't know. But they reach it reaches a certain velocity and it's able to shoot off. And I think of this process similarly because we have the mundane dependent origination cycle in which we suffer, and then suffering causes something else, which causes something else, which causes something else, which perpetuates suffering. And we see the cycle of suffering repeat and repeat and repeat. And this transcendental dependent arising is where we finally lift off from that cycle. We get shot off, right? We see clearly that we're going through a cycle of suffering and we break free, right? So in that context, Bhikkhu Bodhi has this to say about joy. Joy is an outlet from the pent-up tensions of an existential impasse brought on by the reflective encounter with the problem of suffering. Lots of prepositional phrases. But at the heart of them, we're talking about a release brought on by this struggle with suffering, right? We've been going around in circles. We first see the cycle clearly, right? And then we develop the confidence, the faith, to try a different way rooted in the Dhamma that's already taken us this far, right? We get shot off. And then what happens? There is a relief. There's a release, and that relief and that release is joy. And so to make this relatable, I wonder, well, relatable to some, I will say, have you ever experienced that after a period of great struggle, you experience a really intense form of joy, of release? If especially you've been suppressing that for a long time, you've really been in the struggle, the release can be really cathartic, can be really can feel joyful. I wonder if you've experienced that. I'll bet some of us can relate to that. It feels to me, when it's happening to me, like the body is almost holding back joy for the period of struggle, and it's building like a bubble. And so when I finally can let go and release, it comes out more intensely. It's as though it's been building up. And to relate it more specifically, my practice began after a period of great struggle. And during that, there was a lot of emotional suppression. And for years, when I would go into meditation, I would shake and I would shudder. And a lot of what I was doing felt like I was releasing these great waves of joy. I mean, it felt in a way like what I'm shedding was sort of suffering, but it really felt joyous, the release feeling. And it just hadn't been expressed for enough time. And then after a while, those waves subsided, but they subsided for a good reason, I would say. Which is that it doesn't take the kind of disarmament that we do during meditation anymore for me to experience joy. Right? Meditation is a period where we allow ourselves to be a bit more vulnerable. And sometimes it's during those meditations that things come out. They can be hard things. They can be good things. In my case, it was joy. And after a while, it started to just come about in daily life. There'd be, you know, little spurts of joy here and there that just sort of peppered life. And they became almost unnoticeable because they weren't pent up for very long before release. This might be relatable with other emotions with people. If you've ever known people who get angry very quickly and let it out and then they're done with it, you know, these people are wonderful in a certain way because they don't hold it back and they're done when they're done, right? And then they're, you know, and then very often, for me at least, it's the opposite where, you know, I used to just really hold on to it and I didn't want to express it, but it would kind of smolder inside me. And, it, you know, I would hold on to it for a long time as a result. So we can do this with a lot of different emotions. So I want to mention that before I had this experience in meditation of shaking with joy, right, you could not have convinced me that it would happen. Like, you could not have convinced me in the before period of struggle that that would occur. I didn't realize there was a growing bubble of unexpressed joy within me. Really, all I had was a vague sense that there was something missing from my emotional life, you know? And I mention this particularly in case this has not happened, in case you can't relate to these words. And if you can't relate to these words, I think you're not alone. I think there are a lot of people who can't. And I've had several conversations this month because I've talked to people in my life and in my other sanghas that about what we're talking about at SIMS. I've heard a lot of experiences, including people here, including in questions that have come up this month, where this is not a relatable experience. Neither, and when I say not relatable, I mean both the feeling of having this release of joy after a period of struggle, the feeling of being disarmored and experiencing joy in meditation, and also the experience of going through life where it's just kind of, you feel little bits of joy. There are many people who don't have any of those. And I mentioned this particularly, the fact that you couldn't have convinced me that this would happen, as a way of holding out that the opportunity may exist and just be something that is in front of you. So yesterday morning, I was meditating in a group and we were listening to a body. We were listening for things in the body, sounds, literal sounds in the body. And one person who's a poet who has a deep practice of listening, she remarked on having noticed a sound inside herself that she had never noticed before. And she posited that this was the sound of blood flowing, sound of her blood moving. And, you know, I don't know what's literally possible there or not, but it was a beautiful image for me. And it just made me realize, oh my goodness, there are all these things that are in the background that we don't even notice. We can't notice. It's like asking a fish about water, right? Fish doesn't know what water is. It's never experienced anything else. Just the idea that there could be the background sound in our body that we've just never noticed or listened to, and that she suddenly had access to this. It was a beautiful idea. And I would say that if you don't regularly experience joy and haven't experienced a release into joy, consider this possibility that you may still be suppressing it. It may be there in you somewhere. There may be a great bubble of joy waiting to burst. Today, I want to talk in particular to those people, because I think this is a very common and relatable experience. And, you know, if you do experience joy regularly, or you're able to access it in meditation, or maybe you have some memory of having been able to do this, but it's not with you anymore. If you're in any of these other states, my hope is that you still get something from what I'm about to speak about. And maybe there are ways, maybe they are ways to enjoy or enhance joy further, or bring it back if it's a memory. The first thing I want to mention on this is vulnerability. Because I think vulnerability is at the center of what is sometimes blocking us from experiencing joy. So much of this practice, right, depends on our ability to turn and face suffering, right? We know this. At the heart of this practice is experiencing and understanding suffering. And doing so requires courage and vulnerability, but it's hard. We are conditioned against turning to suffering. Sometimes we're conditioned against turning to suffering very deeply. We might have been conditioned at a very early age to avoid certain kinds of suffering. Suze spoke so eloquently about, was it Susie Sunshine? Is that the name? Is it Susie Sunshine? Yeah. About, you know, she shared a very, I don't know, something that touched me very deeply about a way of sort of, well, I'm going to use my own words. I hope they're close. Of almost performing joy, of being joyous outwardly, in order, as a way of you know, meeting her circumstances, difficult circumstances. Others of us have experienced trauma or other difficulties early in life, and we know not to go there. We know not to go to certain places. And I want to continue to honor that wisdom throughout what I'm saying today. I'm not asking anyone to become vulnerable in places that they know they shouldn't go, or that they need to disarmor very slowly and intentionally. In fact, disarmoring slowly and intentionally is something I would recommend for anyone. Right? So we talked just now about how suffering is hard to fix. Right? So why should it be hard to turn and face joy? Right? On the face of it, that feels like we're talking about a totally different thing. Why should that be hard? But it requires us to remove the same armoring that we've put on to avoid suffering. Sometimes we put on this armor to go through life, to avoid suffering, to protect ourselves. And we've protected ourselves from everything, including what's beautiful and wonderful. It can feel unsafe to celebrate. And so I hope I still have this website up. Let me see if I can pull it up. I did a kind of fun, oh, is it gone? Oh, maybe it's gone. Okay, it's gone. Well, anyway, what I did was I thought of this idea that it feels unsafe to celebrate very often. And it occurred to me that this is something that gets mentioned in pop culture all the time, right? That if we take down our arm and we celebrate, we actually experience good things. Watch out. That's when the bad stuff is going to come in and pounce on us, right? And I found all these references to movies. A lot of them were horror movies. And they're all, it was hilarious to read the synopses of all of these movies. And they're all movies where, like, I don't know, a group of people go to a bachelorette party and a mass murderer jumps through the window and starts hacking them up. Or, you know, it's something like that. Or it's all these times when, you know, people are in the midst of a celebration, and in the middle of that celebration, calamity, catastrophe descends upon them. And I think the reason we have so many references to this in pop culture is that this is one of the most terrifying things we can imagine. Right? We finally let down our guard. We're finally relaxing with friends, or, you know, we're disarmored. We've taken off the armor, and that's when we're attacked. Right? It's a great fear. And I think it is also a reason Why? So I say this to name it. This is something in the way, right? And we need to be careful and gentle with ourselves in this disarming process, this disarming process. But it is sometimes what is necessary, ultimately, slowly, carefully, to be able to experience joy. I also think, at least in my opinion, I've seen joy most deeply experienced, sometimes by people who've been to the very edge, right? People who've been to rock bottom and come back from rock bottom. People who have almost ceased to exist and have come back from that point. And in a way, these are people whose armor was forcibly removed. These are people who had nowhere to hide. And there is great suffering in these moments. But sometimes, for some people, these are also moments where they realize that they can live without the armor. And in that recognition, in that ability that they've developed to disarm because of their experiences, they are able to feel joy in these ways that are so expressive sometimes. Maybe I think many of us have probably experienced people like this. So vulnerability, disarming, disarmoring. Also behind this, I think, we can have a belief that joy is something insignificant or unimportant or irrelevant. It's not the tough stuff that we're here to deal with. We convince ourselves that practice is about dealing with serious stuff, and joy simply doesn't qualify. You know, sometimes there's a related feeling, and it's like, we'll have time for that later, once we've done the hard work. Let's put off the joy. Let's sit here. Let's crunch through this, and then we will have time for joy. And so I work at a job where I'm part of the leadership team, and we recently identified that one of the big issues, people are getting a little burnt out, because it's a period of hard work. And we realize that we've been postponing celebration. What? We've been putting it off until for some moment in the future where it feels like we are done and we can finally celebrate. If you can hear my dog, she has one of these colors of shame because she got injured. So she's a little grumpy. You might hear her from time to time. She can't itch where she wants to itch. So we recognized in that meeting that we just weren't celebrating. You're waiting for this moment in the future. And there really is no moment in the future where you're done. Think about your task list. And, you know, I have this relationship where I feel like I can relax today once I'm done with my task list. But the truth is I'm never done with my task list. That task list just shrinks and grows and shrinks and grows and shrinks and grows. So we need to practice this in the moment. We need to have time for joy now, not later when we're done, right? That's another belief that can get in the way. Another thing that can feel like joy is irrelevant or unimportant comes from a misunderstanding of something else that's related, which is our society can be focused on really kind of shallow states of happiness based on materialism, right? We're inundated with commercials where people are biting into a piece of cake and going, ah, right? Or maybe they're rubbing shampoo in their hair and going into ecstatic states as a result of that. Or, you know, or you're told that you need a certain thing, you need to buy a certain thing in order to feel better. You know, and a lot of us are, you know, we have a very clear and conscious recognition of those forces in our society. And we can conflate joy with those shallow states of happiness that we're being urged to cultivate, these little dopamine hits that so many directions we're being asked to value. And there it can be helpful to remind ourselves that the joy we're talking about is not related to those little bits of happiness. This is the kind of joy that is independent of condition. This is something that rises from within. And so in the same practice, the same sangha I talked about yesterday, the same person, in fact, the same poet who heard that sound within herself, shared with us a poem that she had sketched up during a meditation the week before. And she's given me permission to read it, although she thinks it's in a very, very rough state because she is a poet and she can see that it's in a rough state, even though I cannot. The poem's title is Breath. The poet is Susan Landgraf. I'm not gutted with grief or filled with exhilaration. I'm not in a grove of trees or in a graveyard. I'm not rusted, not glazed, but a gourd full of dried seeds, this gift an ancestral beat. I've been given quiet, this ritual away from clocks, the daily news, speeches, guttered with gestures. There is no grain to push against. I am a blade of grass breathing. Can you hear the joy in that? It's a different kind of joy, isn't it? There's also a misunderstanding, sometimes, in my opinion, about jhana practices here. And that can conflate, that can get in the way of our feeling like joy is something worthy of experience. And I won't dive into this too much right now, but some of you know, in this tradition, there is a concern that you can get stuck seeking out a state of rapture within jhana practice. And I just want to note that while that is a valid concern, it's something important not to get stuck in, because jhana states are not liberation. They shouldn't be confused for an endpoint. It is also true in the original teachings that these practices are encouraged. And I say this as someone who did get stuck chasing rapture and had to get unstuck, that there is a place for these practices, and there is a place for the states of joy and even rapture that come from them. And that's being pointed to in this year's teaching. I'll say one last thing that I think can get in the way. And it is, I'll describe it as not fully recognizing the potential of meditation. Jeremy, I see your hand up also. I would hope, if it's a clarification question, I'll take it now. But if it's a question that isn't just a clarification, I'd ask to wait until the place where we'll have time.
Yeah, it's just clarification. I'm not familiar with the term jhana or what it means in this context. Could you explain that a bit more?
I won't explain it right now, but I'll explain it during the end point. Okay. Honestly, if you don't know what that means, then you probably aren't stuck on this point about joy and it's not in your way. So the good news is it's not a problem if that word doesn't mean anything to you, but I will go into it. I won't hold it as a mystery. Cool. I'll mention what it means later. Yeah. Yeah. So not fully recognizing the potential of meditation. I've talked with many people whose meditation practice is a struggle. It feels like the entirety of the process is a struggle with taming the mind, to getting it to behave, to quieting thoughts. And I would just share one thing, which is an experience I had on retreat last year, which I mentioned at some point in these in my talks in the past. After days of struggle in a recent retreat with developing a sort of one-pointed concentration, where we were asked for a couple of days to just keep coming back to the breath, keep coming back to the breath. And my mind just wasn't having it. I was asked to drop the struggle and just become curious about my experience. To not worry about taming the mind, to not worry about even coming back to the breath, but just to become curious. And to let from that curiosity a sort of natural concentration arise. For those of you familiar with Philip Moffitt's naturally arising process, this is what he's talking about, and it's something you can look up and pursue on your own. So to become curious in that way, to drop the struggle, I really had to relax and soften. I had to drop judgment. I had to drop fixing my experience. And it was really hard because I was conditioned to think of cultivating concentration in a different way, to kind of bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. And that bringing it back had started feeling like yanking it back. But once I did it, in a way, it was so gentle and simple that doubt arose. I felt like it couldn't possibly be the right thing to do if it's so simple, if the effort is such a light touch of effort. But I found that then concentration just arose from this feeling of almost childlike curiosity. And I didn't have to struggle for the rest of the retreat with taming my mind. Not because it was tame, but because it was just allowed to be the way it was. And I mention this because without this way of practicing meditation, we can't cultivate, even in meditation, the sort of vulnerability that's required, the sort of disarming. That is required for joy often to arise, particularly if joy feels dangerous to us, if happiness feels unsafe. It takes a while to convince our nervous system and our body that in this moment of meditation, we are not going to be attacked. We are safe in this moment for these minutes, and we can do some quiet disarming. Okay, I wanted to mention all those things. One last thing that I'll say is joy is a precondition for the rest of this path, right? This transcendental dependent arising. It is with joy, from joy, that we go to rapture, to tranquility, to happiness, and so on and so forth until liberation. So if you have some struggle with joy, it's worth taking that seriously. It's in the way. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for listening. I will, so now we move into the part where we can break out into groups and share just a little bit. And I would encourage you to participate if at all feels possible. By hearing what others are sharing, we often hear things that resonate with ourselves. Sometimes we hear things that we didn't know we'd been thinking, but we're thinking. Sometimes we hear people say things and we feel the comfort of recognizing, oh, I'm not alone in this. So this part, this sangha, where we get to discuss in small groups, can really be an opportunity. And even if it's just listening that you do, and you're not sharing anything on your own, that is welcome. That is welcome. So in the next few minutes, you're welcome to share as much or as little. Please do make space for other people to share as well. And please refrain from giving advice or crosstalk, not because you have nothing to say that's wise, but because it can free up other people to share and be more vulnerable in that state. And lastly, after we're done with this, we'll come back to the main group. And when we share in that context, just please remember also to keep anything that came up in the group from another person confidential. It stays within the container of that group. Okay. If anyone must leave, I'll give you a moment to do so now. And then I'll tally up the number of people here and divide us all into groups. Yeah. Welcome back, everyone. We have time now to for anything that anyone wants to share in this wider group, either questions or reflections, anything of that sort. And if you have anything to share, probably the easiest way to do it is to click that raise hand icon that you may see at the bottom of your Zoom. Claire, please.
Thank you. I have a question. I feel like I can access joy, and I feel like through meditating, the concept of mudita has definitely released my ability to feel joy. But sometimes when I'm just feeling joyful, I will think that is this like a spiritual bypass? Am I just like am I forgetting it? You know, am I just kind of being toxically positive? I just wondered if you have anything to say about that.
Well, I'd first just ask you what you think in those moments.
Well, I think it's, I don't know. I think it's, my negative thing about it is that I blame it on aging.
Like you think because you're older, you're happier and...
No, because I'm older, I'm like not aware of stuff.
Oh.
Or like, you know, I'm getting into my own head too much or something like that.
Like there's suffering in the world that you're not seeing. And because you're not seeing it, you're feeling joyful, something like that.
Or that there's something in my life that's really difficult and I'm forgetting that I have that and I'm being joyful instead because the flowers are blooming.
So at the risk of trying to get inside your head and not knowing exactly what's there, I would guess that the very fact that you're wondering that means that you don't need to worry about it. You know, I think the kind of joy that is bypass or excluding, you will know it because you are pressing other things out. You'll know that you're pushing, you're trying to sort of like blast the space with joy so that the things that are hard aren't there. And if that's different from not simply not feeling that anything else is hard in the moment. You know, maybe the question to be asked there is, you're asking the question really, you know, is this a joy that is meant to exclude other things, or could this joy coexist with other things? You know, the kind of joy that comes from the inside can exist alongside sadness, can exist alongside suffering. You can see the flower and appreciate its joy, and also in that very moment feel that things are not quite right in the world in other places.
You know, I think now that we're talking about this, it reminds me of how I felt when I first started meditating, that was I going to, you know, was this going to be bad for my memory because I was trying to stay in the present time instead of dwelling in the past and rehearsing the past? And it kind of, that's sort of what's going on for me here, I think. Like I'm able to be in the present, and then I can see that maybe I should be worrying about money, or maybe I should be worrying about, you know, the roses that need to be watered, but I'm in the present and I'm feeling joy, and, you know, it's okay.
Sounds like you're doing it right.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. And I think what you said is a really wonderful beacon for everyone else here. That's how we do it, you know? And when you talked about being in the present and worrying that would affect your memory, I can connect to that in a different way. When I talked about the unsafety of feeling joy, the feeling like it takes courage, it takes vulnerability to feel joy. I don't know, maybe I hear a little bit of that in what you're saying too. In order to be present, you had to kind of, it's an act of courage to say, okay, I can be present, and it doesn't mean I will forget the past. It's a leap of faith that you're taking in order to do that and to say, okay, I can do this. A friend of mine, he does this thing that I don't have the courage to do, which is he doesn't take notes at meetings or at other places where I feel like I must take notes. And he says that what it took was a leap of faith that he will remember whatever is important. And boy, does that sound hard to me. That is not a leap I've been able to make. I take notes feverishly for everything. But it feels to me like that's another example of this kind of courage to kind of leap out and say, well, this is going to be okay. Yeah. Thank you. Monica.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. My question is, I guess, in the same broad category, you know, when you talked about being afraid of feeling joy, of being open to it, I identified with that.
Yeah.
Even though in the last few years of my practice, I have learned, I have experienced joy in a profoundly new way and a lot more kind of like coming from the inside of me and not coming from like shampoo or cake,
mm-hmm.
or in my case from, you know, other people that had to validate me before I could feel joyful. So,
yeah.
So I'm really happy about that. And it's like a new, very unknown to me historically kind of joy that now I'm able to experience, and that's the good part. The bad part is that, like, I don't trust this yet. It feels such a profound internal transformation that hasn't been happening for a whole lot. You know, other people here have practiced for 30 years, but, you know, I've really successfully practiced or kind of like for a couple. And so like it feels so new and so fleeting. And I'm like, have I really transformed myself? That feels uncertain. And I, you know, like I'm just really afraid of this uncertainty of like this internal transformation.
Yeah.
And it actually is interfering with my ability. Like, I'm like, I don't have the right to this joy. This is like something that I made up. So if you had anything to say to that, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that sharing. I'll bet that there are people who can relate to that in this room right now. I'm seeing nods, thumbs ups. Yep. That's so you're not alone in this. And what I would say most of all, the first thing that comes to me is to be patient with yourself. You're going through a transformation, and it sounds like you're moving in a wonderful direction, but it doesn't happen all at once. And in fact, there is a wisdom to moving slowly. If I'm thinking about this as sort of a removing the armor process, if each time you remove a piece of armor, you kind of wait first, is that okay? Is that safe to do? This is wisdom. This is your own body's wisdom, making sure that you're taking care of yourself in this process. There is a such thing as removing the armor too fast. And the thing you're going through is a process. It's not something that you do and you're done with. It's something that takes a long time and is slow. And when I hear you speaking, it sounds like I'm filled with hope and joy for you, because it sounds like you're in the middle of a wonderful journey. But the journey doesn't need to be done. It doesn't need to be done tomorrow or today. And to be patient with that. If you're feeling uncertainty, uncertainty is part of the path. Uncertainty is the thing that you must turn and face and say, oh, uncertainty. Uncertainty is one of the most well-known, sacred, and experienced parts of this path. We all face uncertainty in various, every room has faced uncertainty on this path. And it's our journey. So just to sometimes naming it when you're going to, oh, here I am. This is an uncertainty. I feel uncertain. I feel unsafe. I feel like I can't trust this joy. Naming that. And then just letting it sit. Letting that be where you are. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very
I feel
much.
Like I've been fighting the uncertainty and
yeah.
Naming it did help. And I just want to say something really quick, that I was talking to someone from the Sangha and they're in their 80s.
Yeah.
And I remember as I was talking to them, the thought that came to me is like, I wish I was in my 80s.
Yeah.
Because they had really had the time. So anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful. Jeremy, I do remember your question about the jhanas, but also it's 11:28. So if you can hang out for a minute or two after we're done, I'm happy to talk about what I meant there.
Sure.
But I, just to respect everyone's time, I want to get through a few announcements and then an offering, metta, so that people can feel like they can leave if they want to. And then anyone who wants can hang around and I can talk a little bit about jhana states. May we awaken to the truth. May we free ourselves from all unnecessary suffering. May all beings awaken to the truth. Beings be free of suffering. Thank you, everyone. It's been a pleasure.